in the KSRO kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, Chef.
Good morning. John Ash. How are you?
Could not be better, actually.
So we've got a great show.
We have, I think, a very
today. I mean, some really interesting topics and kind of things that should be interesting to us all.
Yeah, I think so. The first one, which you called my attention to, was a marvelous article by Pete Wells, who has been the dining columnist, the restaurant reviewer for the New York Times for the past dozen years. I have not read certainly anywhere near all his restaurant reviews, but every time I do read him, he's to me the benchmark for a restaurant reviewer.
Yeah,
because he's not so much about promoting himself and his ego and his style.
No,
there's been a lot of great restaurant reviewers in the New York Times history, but it's kind of like they put the spotlight on them first. That's my own take. To show what great writers they are and how clever they are with the turn of phrase.
And that they know everything there is to know
about
food.
And that's not Pete.
Yeah.
That's not Pete. He's self-effacing. He's very opinionated, but he's not just going for the jugular. He really does try to balance his reviews very carefully. And he decided after a dozen years that it's time to step aside. He was not let go by the New York Times.
Yeah, he's going to continue to write for the Times. And
he wrote a wonderful article called "I Reviewed Restaurants for 12 Years. They've Changed, and Not for the Better." And what was your take away when you first read the article?
Well, I think all of us have had experiences with the things that he talked about. How, you know, and it's not all restaurants, but how you can never get a straight answer from somebody at the restaurant, either about a reservation or any of that stuff, you know. And I think you made the observation, it's in New York where he's at in his area, it's a little crazier there. It's not quite so crazy. There's still people here who will answer phones and stuff like that, but I was really taken by it, and I thought his comments were really right on about the state of restaurants, and the fact that I think the reason they have such a hard time is that they brought it on themselves. With, you know, this is another example of having things like trees that will answer all your questions when you call, or the reservation one really drives me crazy. About you?
It's very convoluted many times to make reservations nowadays. And he points out, which I really thought was very thoughtful, was that the human equation has been taken out. He wrote, these changes are small, but together they've made going out to eat much less personal.
Mm-hmm.
Meals are different now, and our sense of who we are is different, too. In my first few years of the job, I thought of restaurants as one of the few places left where our experiences were completely human. We might work silently in our cubicles. We might walk around with speakers in our ears. We might buy our books and sweaters and toothpaste with a click and wait for them to be delivered. But when we went out to eat, we were people again. He said, no machine could drink rosé or chew my lamb chops. Yeah. I thought that was great. At every critical point in the meal, there were people there to guide us. From the moment we walked in, we talked with hosts, bartenders, captains, runners, bussers. Being served in a restaurant wasn't passive. We participated. Now we scan QR codes so we can read the menu on a screen. And I loved this line, restaurants are turning into vending machines with chairs.
Yeah, and then asking for a tip on top of it.
Asking for tips. He said, now restaurants hardly ever pay someone to actually pick up the phone and talk with you, to have a conversation. It's preferred that they do this all online. And he said, the few places that actually pick up the phone are far and few and in between. He noticed that reservations, once a simple agreement between you and the restaurant, are now a commodity that other people can profit from. Oh, this was hard to hear. Diners getting aced out in the race for tables by bots, which can then turn around and resell the spot to the highest bidder.
Isn't that crazy? I think that's more a big city phenomena than it
but
is.
But things start, as we know, in big cities and then trickle down to smaller markets. So this might be the handwriting also. He wrote that vendors I've never heard of, never been to, because they aren't real restaurants. They're called ghost kitchens, and we've heard of this. And I have no idea who's cooking there or where my money goes. Are my dollars supporting a local business owner who lives on my block? Or am I enriching investors in a startup based in Silicon Valley? Dig. Restaurants that pride themselves.
Well, and that's happening here.
And that's happening. You're right. It's not just there. It's here in Sonoma County, too. Restaurants that provide, that are professionals and are now more faceless than ever. The reaches depressing depths at the modern tasting counter, which during my time as critic came to dominate the fancy dining sector. A few of these places are wonderfully personal and idiosyncratic, but many of them feel utterly interchangeable. They follow the same template down to the signed menu you're given as you leave, as if you were going to run right home and paste it in your scrapbook, which was pretty funny too. A lot of tasting menu restaurants assume correctly that almost nobody sitting at the counter is going to become a regular. Those places are built for one-night flings, not long-term relationships. They're hookup restaurants. Oh, that was painful. People who consume a steady diet of bucket lists and viral videos rush from one restaurant to another so they can post about it to prove that they were there. The pop-up restaurants, though, the micro-bakeries are still riding a wave of popularity that started during the pandemic. A large part of the appeal of those places is the chance to meet the person who baked the croissant or cooked your food. That was really insightful, very telling. He said, we may value the chance to meet the smaller vendors even more because we've lost so many of the personal exchanges we used to have in restaurants. And he says, now, not every restaurant needs to provide an intense emotional experience. I love the quick service of Japanese ramen shops where you pay before you eat. But if we're going to stay in a restaurant for more than a few minutes, he said, at least I want to connect. A server's little smile, a little joke, a rave for a particular dish or subtle effort, it might be to bump up their tip a little, but they also ground us.
Yeah, and we aren't given the computer that asks how much tip we're going to leave, and then recommendations on percentages to leave, and you know it's kind of you know, and I reckon being a past restaurateur, I recognize that it's a tough business and all of that, but I think some of the ways of dealing with customers and guests and stuff are. There. And the other interesting thing, I thought, there was a follow-up article that written by somebody else who interviewed him about this, and it was, I always thought, wouldn't it be great to be a restaurant reviewer for some big city newspaper and have the, like the New York Times, pay for your experiences and all that stuff? And it wasn't pleasant at all.
Not pleasant at all. Yeah. Let me just excerpt a couple of those comments that Pete made during the exit interview. He said things that sharing about the experience of going out incognito that you've never been able to talk about before. I love this story he tells. He said, well, when I first started, I bought a novel to the restaurant. I brought it to the restaurant. It's called A Perfect Spy by John Le Carré. And I just thought I'd get some pointers on what he calls tradecraft, the art of blending in, you know, so I wouldn't be recognized, the art of not being noticed. So I was carrying this around, and I carried it one night into a restaurant I was reviewing, and then I left it behind. A week or two later, I got an envelope in the mail, and I opened it up, and it was the book. And then I opened the book up, and I realized I was using my pay stub from the New York Times as my bookmark. Mm. So I had not just my name and my address, but how much money I made, what my deductions were, my pay stub, everything was in that book. And he said, yeah, I've made other major faux pas also, like using my own credit card to go out to dine. So much for incognito.
So, so I do remember, you know, even in our part of the world, that we got pictures of the critics, and made sure that the wait staff were aware of them, so that they, even if they had a phony name and all of that stuff on the reservation, so that they could recognize them
when they would come into John Ash and Company. Yeah, yeah. There we are. What advice, Pete, would you have for somebody who aspires to be a restaurant critic? Listeners, think up. He says, quote, think about it before it's too late. He said, that's something I didn't do. You know, think about it. Also, just be aware that if you're doing it for the long haul, conditions will change for your mind and your body. You do need to be aware that you will be doing things to your body that most of the people around you are not doing, like the amount of calories that you will be consuming, the lack of exercise. There's a price to pay, even though it looks like the dream job of all.
Yeah.
And finally, the final question was, Pete, what are you looking forward to the most? He said, it'll be nice to be in a restaurant and not have to go through this little charade of them pretending they don't know who I am and me pretending that I believe them. Just to your point, John, it would just be nice to ask, hey, how you doing tonight? He said, there's a sort of cloistered element to the job of restaurant critic where you have to remove yourself from society a little bit. It'll be nice to step down among humanity again.
Well, the other thing, which you mentioned, that he talks about is how unhealthy it is. I thought, oh, maybe I don't want to be a restaurant critic after all.
Pete Wells, New York Times. Coming up next, what would you think if, what do you think your parents would have thought, John, if you would have said, Mom, Dad, I'm 18, I'm going off to college, I'd like you to pay my tuition so I can go study coffee?
I was blown out by, you shared this with me, so that.
My mom would have said, you've got to be kidding.
Get a degree in coffee.
Well, now you can. We'll talk to the gentleman that's put this program together at the Higher Institution of Learning. That's coming up next on the KSRO Good Food Hour.
The Ramsey Show, Saturday and Sunday afternoons, 3 to 6 on KSRO, is brought to you by Cobran Financial. Can you retire? Find out with Cobran Financial.
I look at my face in the mirror, my neck, my jawline, my cheeks, and I think to myself, all I need is just a little lift.
I can help with that. I'm Dr. Stanley Jacobs, triple board certified facial plastic surgeon and director of the Jacobs Center for Cosmetic Surgery in Healdsburg. My Mighty Mini Lift procedure lifts the fascia in just the right spots to give you that little boost with natural looking and lasting results and less than the cost of a full facelift.
My results are even better than I expected. Dr. Jacobs and his staff are amazing.
It's the most popular facelift procedure I've introduced to my patients in more than 20 years. It can even be combined with other procedures, and you'll be back to your routine in about a week.
To book a free consultation to learn whether you are a candidate for the Dr. Jacobs Mighty Mini Lift procedure, visit thejacobscenter.com. Thejacobscenter.com.
What is the best-kept secret in Sonoma County? It could be the Robert Ferguson Observatory off Highway 12 above Kenwood. They call it RFO, and the 200 gifted volunteer docents teach astronomy to kids and adults all year round. Have you ever heard of a star party? RFO has 14 of them each year. Three magnificent professional hands-on telescopes, plus classroom presentations. Summer is a great time to visit the observatory. July 27th and August 24th, come to the Star Party from 9 to midnight. What's Up programs are August 1st and September 5th, and the next Night Sky class is August 5th. Enjoy the night sky with a new perspective. Robert Ferguson Observatory is just 25 minutes from downtown Santa Rosa within Sugarloaf Ridge State Park. It's not meant to be a secret, so tell your friends and make plans for an amazing evening among the stars. Get all the information you need and buy your tickets at rfo.org.
This year, Dell Technologies Back to School event is delivering impressive tech with an inspiring purpose. Learn how Dell is helping ComputerAid, whose work is helping solar community hubs with tech and AI literacy skills to empower remote, displaced, or disconnected communities around the world. Help Dell make a difference and shop AI-ready PCs powered by Snapdragon X Series processors at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Hi, I'm Sean Van Pakum, manager of the Montgomery Village branch of Exchange Bank. At Exchange Bank, we know Sonoma County. We also know it's a tough housing market. If you're looking for a local mortgage expert, our in-house loan consultants are here to help. Swing by today and let's talk mortgages. Exchange Bank, where your home story begins. Learn more at exchangebank.com.
Exchange Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, NMLS number 643948. All loans subject to credit approval.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
This edition of the KSRO Good Food Hour is brought to you by the 2025 Culinary Cruise with Chef John Ash to Alaska. It's coming up September 9th. Through the 18th, that's 2025, but it will sell out. You can find out all about it at the Cruise Mixer, Thursday, August 22nd, 6 to 7:30, hosted by Total Wines and More in Santa Rosa. You'll hear from the Oceana Cruise representative, enjoy complimentary wine tasting. You will meet Chef John Ash and find out about the special offer for attendees. More info and RSVP, email cruise at travelize.com. Cruise at travelwise.com.
Well, so remember, this is 2025.
Yeah. That's right. But it sells out early,
it
these
does.
Cruises.
It does. So it's a lot of fun.
So August 22nd at Total Wine and More to meet you, Chef John Ash.
Yeah, but more importantly, get all your questions answered.
So we received something in the email which just blew our minds, so to speak, and that is the ability for us, if we were of a younger age, to go to college, to go to the university, and earn a certificate, which is pretty wild, the first academic coffee certificate available in the United States, which is just remarkable. And to tell us about this revolutionary new course is Dr. Mian Riaz. Dr. Riaz, thank you so much for joining us this morning, John and me. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you very much for taking me, man.
We're thrilled. And you're associated with Texas A&M, is that correct? You've been there for quite a number of years.
Yes, almost 31 years, that is correct.
And what is your particular discipline and expertise?
Basically, I teach in the Department of Food Science and Technology, where we teach different kind of food processing and different kind of commodity crops, where how do you process them, and coffee is one of them.
Coffee is one of them.
So do you like coffee?
Of course I do. I just had coffee myself.
Yeah. I figured you did. So how come it's taken such a long time for there to be this focus on coffee? Isn't it the world's most popular beverage?
Yes. If you look statistic-wise, I think I was reading some time ago, around 67% of U.S. population take a coffee almost every day, and it is growing. In College Station, Texas, where Texas A&M University is, we didn't have any coffee shop a few years ago. Though now we have almost every corner, every street, we're getting a coffee. Hmm. It's getting very, very popular with the new generations. And if you look around 20 years ago, it was less than around 40% population will take it, but now it's around almost 67-70% population taking coffee every single day. It's becoming a very good commodity.
So if someone came to Texas A&M and got a degree, what would that set them up to do?
Yes, well, this is basically if they are enrolled at Texas A&M and they are studying food science, their degree as a major, they can take certain courses, and then they will get a certificate in coffee, which help them to maybe secure a better job. They maybe go ahead and work with different organization with having extra certificate. They will have their degree in the food science, but also they will have a certificate in a coffee, and that help them to maybe, you know, get better job, better be prepared for the future. It just help them just for the future. Mm.
So it must be a big business. Coffee.
It is a big, big business. It is like last time, you know, again, it is over $100 billion business, the coffee market globally. And it is growing. And I think last time I was reading that it's going to go over $140 billion in just a few more years. Like by 2030 and six, seven more years, It is very, very big commodity, and it's very, very big market, and then that's why everybody looking into coffee.
So is it endangered, coffee? I've heard some things about, you know, the change in climate and all of those things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's one of that our mission here is we have here our coffee processing quality, you know, there's that center there, coffee research and education. They help the farmers on coffee growing areas in different countries, especially in South America and all that, and helping them to protect the crop, teach them how to grow it. We also teach also other farmers, you know, how to protect the coffee. Therefore, that's one of that the reason we started that, because we've been helping lot of countries to how to best grow the coffee, how to protect that from diseases, and how to protect them from insect. And you are right, it was in danger and all that. And that's why I initiated life. We are teaching them how to grow and all that. We also need to tell them how to process them better quality and for better flavors and all different health benefit. We need to let them know. Therefore, you are correct. Yes, it was there going on in some of the parts of the world, but no, they are getting it some education from Texas A&M how to protect their crops.
If I can read about what the certificate will include, a number of additional academic fields such as horticulture, crop science, agricultural economics, hospitality, tourism, nutrition. Students will learn about technological advances in coffee processing, the genetics of various coffee species, and practical alternative uses for coffee components and byproducts. So this is a very well-rounded introduction to the world of coffee.
Yes, as you mentioned that we will have a Department of Crop Sciences will teach them how to grow that. We will have horticulture to let them know how to, you know, harvest this one. And then some other economics is a trading. It's a very big thing that how you trade the coffee, how you buy the coffee, economic. Therefore, we got involved almost every single department here so they can understand. Even people in the entomology, the insect, they study that. They can also learn about it, how to protect that. Therefore, as you read, this is basically our goal is that we need to get multidisciplinary department here so everybody can help to understand how can we prepare our students better for the future in the coffee.
So why Texas A&M?
Because we have here, as I mentioned, that we have here Borlaug Institute, and then here we had also a coffee research and education center. And that's where we've been helping through that USAID different programs to go to different countries and helping them about the coffee growing in different part of that country's world. And therefore, that's when I initiated there. Therefore, they started a center here, coffee center. And from there, they started, okay, let's start offering a coffee certificate here as well, because we're in the food science that we teach people how to, you know, process coffee. And then we horticulture, they have a coffee crops there. They teach them exactly how to grow coffee and how to, you know, harvest coffee and how to post-harvest, how to handle it. Therefore, we are already doing everything there. And then idea came in, okay, why not we offer the certificate? That's why we started our first university to be offering the coffee certificate.
It's one thing to be sitting in a classroom learning about the complexities of coffee, but also learning about the rigorous back-breaking work that goes into it. Your students have had a chance to do this. How does that work?
Yes, I think right now we have the course, I think right now in the summer, they have taken them to some other country, the coffee growing country, where they actually go in the field and they will see that how they grow, how it's harvested, how this is being processed, then they bring it here. Therefore, I think students will have a chance to either work. There's like 3 credit hours they can work in somewhere as an intern or go to this trip outside the country where the coffee growing areas are. And that's where they will learn everything hands-on, so they have a very good idea when it comes to the coffee that what does it take to do everything.
So if I had a student who wanted to come and take the course, when I graduated, could I get a good job?
Yes, I think most of that the people in the food science get a good job because everybody have to eat the food and have to drink the water. Therefore, basically, you know, every time we have students who graduate here, they immediately find somewhere a job in the food industry, and coffee is one of that. A lot of people think about coffee, just hard coffee and all that, but coffee goes almost, you can see cold beverages, go to the chocolate, go to, you know, some other, you know, some other shakes, go to all different forms. And therefore, it's not only the coffee that people think coffee shop and all that. They have to think about broader range, where coffee been used in a lot of different even chocolates, the candies, and then of the bars, and then we have some other different products they're bringing up in that baking industry. We use a lot of chocolate. Therefore, everywhere else we use it, powder forms, liquid form, is it in some of the frozen dessert, we use that one, chocolate cakes, and it's a hot. Therefore, it's not anymore the old concept of coffee is always drink is a hot coffee. No, it is actually the commodity coffee. Mm-hmm. We're going to take it and use it in all different food applications.
Well, I'm looking at the Certificate in Coffee Processing and Quality, the mm-hmm. syllabus, the outline mm-hmm. at Texas A&M University. And the focus is certainly on the agricultural part, certainly understanding the marketing and the, mm-hmm. the dollars and cents part. But this you're going to get a very solid grounding in the science of coffee in this course.
Yes. Yes, we will do it. Also, we will talk about, we have course on one course which talk about sensory evaluation, where basically you will learn how to evaluate, how to make different blends of coffee to get the better flavor. And we also will have it, the health benefit of that. Also, one of the courses that we had there, some more to see if the coffee have some health benefit for the people. Always think about coffee, caffeine, but there are also some health benefit. Therefore, there are, you're right in that angle of processing side, agriculture side, but also on that, how you roast, different kind of roasting, processing, fermentation. And then, of course, we will do it to some of that benefits and the creating the flavors that are part of the whole process.
Okay, so I'm going to challenge you. What are the health benefits of coffee?
That is right. Of course, it has some, again, you can ask some of the people who actually deal that one. They can make you, a little bit more alert and then also have you, some of your mind will be more sharp there, and they have some of the phytochemicals and some of the additional additives there that we add there as well during fermentation. They create special phytochemicals that help your nerve system, help your different brain activities. Therefore, it has quite a few different benefits. If you read that one, it gives you very good, freshness in your mind and give you also some healthy thinking on that one.
When a student graduates with this, they'll receive a minimum of 15 credits. Is that correct? And they receive an actual certificate in coffee processing and quality?
Yeah, it will be. They have a bachelor degree, and during their bachelor degree, they have taken these 15 credit hours. Therefore, other than getting a bachelor degree, they will get also these additional to that will be a certificate. Therefore, basically, this is a part of their curriculum for a bachelor degree for 4 years. And then during that four year, they must take these courses that we mentioned in that coffee certificate. Once they take these courses, they also finish their bachelor degree, but also they get additional what they call certificate for that, because they have studied the specific courses, and that courses will give them a certificate.
Where is Texas A&M University for us here in the Bay Area?
Okay, it is in College Station in between Houston, Austin, a triangle, Austin and Dallas. If you come to Houston, it's 100 miles. Come to Austin, it's 100 miles. If you come from Dallas, it is almost 200 miles, and San Antonio is 200 miles. It's right here in the center, where is the house of, we have a George Bush Sr., and he's buried here, as well as his library is here. And it is one of the largest campus population by university here on College Station. It is, name is called College Station. That's basically just a university town.
Have you ever visited Texas A&M University?
I have not visited, but certainly I've heard of it. And you have a great football team, or occasionally have a great football team. So are there are political implications to mm-hmm. coffee growing. I mean, you read about in various countries around the world, people are... Well, they don't always work in the best of working conditions and stuff. Yes. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's everywhere. It's not only in coffee area. If you take any crop, vegetables, you take it, some of that fruits, the picking area, you take it, tobacco area, all that's the same. It's just a commodity. And in all of the world, I mean, I have gone to other country, Costa Rica and all that, the banana population, the pineapple, they all are the same situation where the coffee is there. Therefore, that's more than, out of our control. But each country, they use labor, they use different environment for all the workers. It doesn't matter. Agriculture commodities, the coffee, is a banana, is a pineapple, is a mango, whatever that is, it's all the same on the other countries. But we are trying to help the farmers to grow and mm-hmm. elevate their status. That's what our goal here is, that we're trying to tell them to get some more profit from the coffee so they can give better services to their employees and their workers.
So when I buy coffee, is there something, is there some certifying group or body that I should look to tell me that it's good, that it's been grown in a wholesome way, and that it's been grown in a way that benefits the farmers and all of that?
Yeah, there are quite a few different commodities coming up, and I believe some of the coffee too that you will see it on there. It is say that grown in good condition, are fair trade. It say that labor. Therefore, there are some symbols there. I do not know exact name of anything, but there are. I have seen some of the label where they mentioned that all the things you mentioned there on the label, that this was a fair trade. It was done in that humane way and all that. There's no, there's different, I think, labels. I don't remember, but there are some of the signs you will read on the label that tell you that it is harvested and properly, and there's no any, it's sustainable. And that's the other thing is that they want to make sure it's sustainable. It's not any damaging the environment. It is safe. And also, it's there are some other certification that people are putting to it just to improve their image about that. This is very fairly been grown, processed, and we don't any did anything special on the laborers and other people.
Well, coffee awareness and interest, it is at an all-time high, and Texas A&M is at the forefront. Dr. Mian Riaz is Associate Department Head and holder of the professorship in food diversity in the Department of Food Science and Technology at Texas A&M University, shedding light on the brand-new first academic coffee certificate offered in the United States. We look forward to sharing a cup of coffee with you sometime in the future, Dr. Riaz.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining John and me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming back, we'll talk about, do you know who's making your cheese?
I
and do
don't
you know where those know. Ingredients are actually
and
coming from?
And what is American cheese?
Well, we'll learn from Janet Fletcher, who's probably writes, I think it's close to our favorite cheese blog in America, called Planet Cheese. Janet will be on with us next. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with Steve Garner and Chef John Ash.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Dr. Tom's work is truly world-class.
Introducing another grateful client of Dr. Tom Cosmetic Surgery in Santa Rosa, Napa, and Maui.
I'm a flight attendant, and believe me, when it comes to plastic surgery, I have seen it all. Luckily, my friend told me about Dr. Tom's website. I took a look soon after I met him. I was immediately taken by his warm and authentic demeanor. I love that he only uses local anesthesia. That made all the difference to me. I decided on two procedures, breast augmentation and Botox. Now, whenever my girlfriends see me in a bathing suit, the first thing they ask me after they tell me how amazing I look is, where did you go? I want that. My answer? Dr. Walter Tom in Santa Rosa. He and his staff are the best the world over, and I've been all over the world.
For your complimentary consultation with Dr. Tom, call 707-542-8346.
Let's stay young together.
Visit Dr. Tom Cosmetic Surgery in Santa Rosa, Napa, and Maui. Online at drtomcosmetic.com. That's drtomcosmetic.com.
Join Chef John Ash, the two-time James Beard Award-winning cookbook author, teacher, and host of the Good Food Hour for an exclusive 2025 culinary cruise.
Set sail from Seattle and journey through breathtaking Alaskan scenery while learning new cooking techniques from Chef John Ash.
This exclusive cruise includes an intimate cooking class with Chef Ash himself, a welcome cocktail reception, and other special opportunities just for our group.
Enjoy cruising on the ultra-premium cruise line Oceana aboard the Riviera. With just a 1,250 guest capacity, this discover what small ship luxury truly means.
Join Chef Ash and our next cruise mixer and learn all about it. Thursday, August 22nd from 6 to 7:30 at Total Wines & More in Santa Rosa. Includes a complimentary wine tasting. RSVP to secure your spot. Email Elise Corey of TravelWise at cruise@travelwise.net or call 707-935-WISE, 935-WIZE.
The Culinary Cruise with Chef John Ash to Alaska, September 2025. Go to this station's website and click on the 2025 cruise for more info.
Agricultural Community Farmers Markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week year-round.
The Cotati Farmers Market in La Plaza Park is every Wednesday from 4:30 to 7:30 through September 25th. All season long, there'll be fresh produce vendors, a kids area, local crafts, fresh flowers, restaurant quality prepared foods, beer and wine from the Cotati Chamber of Commerce, and live music. The Rohnert Park Farmers Market and Party on the Plaza Music Series is Fridays 5 to 8 through August 30th. There's a certified farmers market, food and craft booths, beer and wine, and live music covering blues, country, and rock and roll. Bring your dancing shoes! More booths than ever with locally grown fresh produce vendors, locally made food products including baked goods, jams, hummus, and local artisans. Choose from over a dozen restaurant quality prepared food vendors on Restaurant Row and throughout the market. Expanded curbside shopping service available.
Info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
At American Ag Credit, we know agriculture is changing in ways we only imagined, and we'll be here to help you navigate the road ahead for the continued success of your operations and community. American Ag Credit has the treasury management products that keep your operation moving, ensuring your money works as hard as you do. Backed by a team of dedicated experts, we provide custom solutions for management of your working capital. For more information, visit agloan.com/success. American Ag Credit, your future grows here.
It's Chef John Ash and Steve Gardner in the KSRO kitchen. Good morning, listeners. Thanks for joining us this morning, celebrating our 38th year, America's longest running radio gardening and food program. This is the food portion. When we have questions about cheese, our favorite blog in the whole country is Planet Cheese, written by Janet Fletcher. And John, you emailed me this week saying, you've got to read Janet's latest post. Mm-hmm. Who made your goat cheese? And you said, let's invite her on the show to talk about this. Janet, thanks for joining John and me this morning.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure.
So what tickled your interest in exploring this topic?
Well, what happened was, and this was about a year ago, I got a shipment from a Wisconsin cheese producer, goat cheese producer, and on the outside of her box, her cardboard box, was a sticker that said, say no to frozen curd. And that piqued my interest. What was that all about? And she informed me that a lot of producers, mostly the larger companies, the larger cheesemakers, were, at least on occasion, using frozen curd. And some of it was imported. It wasn't even California curd. It was from Spain or Israel or beyond. And that really bothered her because she was making, you know, fresh goat cheese from fresh goat milk.
And
I decided to look into it.
And I'm assuming she had to charge more for that fresh milk cheese that she was providing. But what's wrong with frozen curd?
Well, you know, the cheesemakers who use it will say it helps them keep their cheese in production year round.
Uh-huh.
Goats are very seasonal producers. They give a lot of milk in the spring and summer and then not very much in the fall and winter. And, of course, the fourth quarter of the year is when retailers sell a whole lot of goat cheese. So it really creates a production problem for goat cheese makers. They will all, you know, maybe off the record tell you that the cheese made with the frozen curd isn't quite as good. But, you know, that's why most of them use it for the kind of cheese where they're going to add seasonings like honey or
flavorings,
maple syrup.
Yeah.
Yeah, flavoring.
So have you ever done a side-by-side comparison of frozen curd versus fresh curd? And could you tell the difference? I mean, you have the most sophisticated palate around.
Well, thank you. I have not. And it might be challenging to do that because we're talking about, and here's the other thing, we're talking about a quote-unquote fresh product. Most of this frozen curd doesn't go into aged cheeses. It goes into the cheese that you see at the supermarket that says fresh goat cheese. So is it fresh? You know, it was made with frozen curd that was thawed, mm-hmm. seasonings were added, and then it's put into a package that very often says fresh goat cheese. So, you know, how do we feel about that? But yeah, I don't know. I've never done that, and I think it would be kind of a hard tasting to organize. Mm-hmm.
Well, you did reach out to cheesemakers, and they had opinions. I liked what Judy Shad, founder of Capriole Gold Cheese in Indiana, she said, if you import curd from Denmark, it's no longer an American cheese. All you're doing is repackaging it. It's like stores that say, we make our own mozzarella. No, they don't. They get polio curd in a bucket. They heat it and stretch it. What do you think about her response?
Well, it made sense to me. And I, you know, I'm also was my own analogy was to frozen orange juice. We all know there's a lot of frozen orange juice concentrate coming in from California, I mean, from China. But if a restaurant then thaws it and puts it on the menu as fresh orange juice, is that deceptive? I think it is.
I think it is, too.
Yeah, so that's a bit of similar to what's going on. And I just feel like there might be it might be the moment where we need a little more transparency in the labeling.
But you in the past have told us about, and you've said it here, that there are shortages of milk at various times in the year. So what's, if you're a cheesemaker and you want to have a product that's consistently available, what do you do?
Well, that's the challenge. And that's why they are turning to this frozen curd. Sometimes it's their own frozen curd. When they have all this milk in spring and summer, they might freeze some of it for the low periods. But there's also, there's just a shortage here in the U.S. because of goat milk. Because a lot of it is, and this was a surprise to me, a lot of it is getting purchased by pet food manufacturers. They are, that's the trend now. That at the high end of pet food, goat milk is a, you know, something you want to feed your pets. So it's going into pet food, it's going into cosmetics like soaps and lotions, and it's going into these protein powders that people are using for, you know, for smoothies and, you know, protein energy drinks. So that's where a lot of the goat milk is going. So, you know, I understand why manufacturers feel like they need to reach out for more supply wherever they can find it. But I really liked what the guy from Vermont Creamery had to say, the general manager there said, you know, we're really, yes, we use frozen curd on occasion for some of our flavored cheeses, but we are really working with our farmers on how to breed their goats so that they give more milk. We're working on trying to get more of a stable supply of milk year-round by working with our farmers. Mm.
I was interested in what the annual, the American Cheese Society judging had to say, and you mentioned that they require that entries be made with milk from the Americas. Well, does that mean South America?
It does, and it's a very conscious effort on behalf of the American Cheese Society, of which I'm a member, to embrace all of the Americas. So in the competition, just this last month, a cheese from Canada won Best of Show. And that's, you know, that's great. We're trying to open our doors to cheeses from Latin America, to cheeses from Canada. So that's why that language is there. But they don't want cheesemakers entering cheeses in the American Cheese Society competition that are made with frozen curd from Israel.
We'll take a two-minute break. We'll be right back with Janet Fletcher. Planet Cheese is her blog, her latest post, Who Made Your Goat Cheese? I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen this morning.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, 96.9 in Petaluma, and 94.5 in Sonoma at KSRO.com and on the KSRO app.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
Join Chef John Ash, the two-time James Beard Award-winning cookbook author, teacher, and host of the Good Food Hour for an exclusive 2025 culinary cruise.
Set sail from Seattle and journey through breathtaking Alaskan scenery while learning new cooking techniques from Chef John Ash.
This exclusive cruise includes an intimate cooking class with Chef Ash himself, a welcome cocktail reception, and other special opportunities just for our group.
Enjoy cruising on the ultra-premium cruise line Oceana aboard the Riviera. With just a 1,250 guest capacity, this discover what small ship luxury truly means.
Join Chef Ash and our next cruise mixer and learn all about it. Thursday, August 22nd from 6 to 7:30 at Total Wines & More in Santa Rosa. Includes a complimentary wine tasting. RSVP to secure your spot. Email Elise Corey of TravelWise at cruise@travelwise.net or call 707-935-WISE, 935-WIZE.
The Culinary Cruise with Chef John Ash to Alaska, September 2025. Go to this station's website and click on the 2025 cruise for more info.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, and we're talking with Janet Fletcher from Planet Cheese, her great cheese blog, which you can sign up for a subscription. We'll tell you how to do that. And about who made your goat cheese. And we had a lively discussion, of course, during the break, Janet, as you could imagine. And my example was to speak to your point about orange juice. I've had frozen orange juice that says a mix of Brazilian, Mexican, etc., or concentrate. That's lousy. I've also had frozen orange juice and fresh orange juice that say fresh orange juice, not from concentrate, and it's lousy too. So I guess, yeah. So John, to your point, why don't you bring that up to Janet?
And yeah, well, if there's a supply problem, and you quote, you quote somebody in the article about the fact that relying solely on fresh milk to make your cheese means it's going to be a lot more expensive. So in the, I don't know, to make it more available, the fact that we use frozen, if in fact it still tastes good and all of that, what's the problem? Isn't that good marketing?
Yeah, there is no problem. If it's a good product, well-made product, you know, who cares whether it's fresh or frozen? But you want to know. I mean, you don't want to buy a product that says fresh goat cheese from California when it's neither one. So I think we want to have truth in labeling. And it's a little complicated because I think one of my readers told me in a comment after the blog posted that the law says that if you get an ingredient like goat curd from another country, you have to transform it in some way to make it quote unquote American. So what does transform mean?
Yeah,
is it enough to just thaw it and put it in a package? Do you have to add something to it? You know, change the shape? But that's what the law says. You have to transform it.
I liked another one of your readers' comments that wrote, perhaps the labeling should be about percentages. For instance, in order to call the wine by its grape name, say Chardonnay, it must contain at least 75% of that grape. Maybe with goat cheese, it could be labeled American if it contained a certain percentage of curds from American goats. What do you think of that idea, Janet?
Well, that's an interesting suggestion. The challenge is that because it's changing throughout the year, some months you have your own curd and some months you don't. You'd have to have multiple labels. You know, it'd be some record keeping and some production issues. I don't think it would be impossible. So, yeah, that's a potential solution. I think it might make consumers feel more informed. It doesn't necessarily mean that the cheese is going to be better when it's made with the fresh curd, but I think most cheesemakers would say it is better with the fresh curd.
But I guess until we do a side-by-side comparison, we won't have a definitive answer.
So I'd love for there to be that side-by-side comparison, because I'm all for supporting our local farmers and all of that stuff. But if you're talking about a product that is often in short supply and all of that kind of business, if there's another source for that and it just happens to be frozen, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, you know, another solution, harder, more difficult one, is to really come up with ways to keep these goat farmers in business. It's a very difficult business on a small scale, and they don't get any price supports like our cow, you know, our cow dairy farmers get price supports for their milk, and the goat farmers don't. And they get, you know, it takes 10 goats to make the same amount of milk as one cow. So it's 10 times the, you know, you need more labor, you need more equipment, you need more barn space if you're a goat farmer. So your costs go way up. Yeah, I think consumers maybe need to become accustomed to paying a little bit more for goat cheese than they do for other types, because the fundamental costs are higher.
Well, it's a lot to think about, which I never considered.
Yeah.
And I love goat cheese. We eat it frequently, but I never thought about this issue until reading your Planet Cheese.
Yeah.
So how do we become a subscriber to Planet Cheese, Janet?
Well, it's absolutely free, and it's you can sign up on my website, which is janetfletcher.com, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R, janetfletcher.com. You'll see a little opportunity to sign up for Planet Cheese newsletter. It comes once a week, and it's a really quick read. This post was one of the longer ones, but usually it's a very quick read about some new cheese I discovered, or cheesy recipes, or cheese news. And of course, you can unsubscribe at any time if you don't enjoy it. But I would love to have some of your listeners as my Planet Cheese readers.
Thank you, Janet. It's always illuminating when we have you on the show. Thanks for taking time to join John and me.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Take care, Janet Fletcher. Next time we pick up some goat cheese, some food for thought.
Well, you know, it's an issue with all the products that we buy. Mm-hmm. So the chocolate that we buy, should that be specified somehow that it comes from a country that we agree with their politics or not?
A discussion for another day. Thank you, John Ash. We'll see you next week in the KSRO Kitchen.
Okay.
Thanks, listeners. Talk to you next week.
I'm Guy Benson. Please join me early afternoons live for the Guy Benson Show.
The conversation is great.
On Sonoma County's FM News Talk, KSRO.